I can speak. Yep. Can you hear me?
Yep, that's good. We can hear you loud and clear as usual. Thank you.
Fantastic. Maria is... Oh, you are there, Maria. Okay, cool. Good morning, Mr. Murphy.
Morning. Good morning.
A lot of my questions have been asked by Commissioner Marson, but I have a few sort of points of clarification I'd like to make and a couple more questions as well. Going to your statement from this morning and paragraph 13, and you're quoting from the business development capacity assessment. Your last sentence there, that the ongoing concern is that emerging land ownership concentration will remain relatively high. What do you mean there?
I think if you look at the combination of the Key Rail Notice of Requirement and the land ownership of the existing Northeast Industrial Zone and the Northeast Industrial Zone extension area, a significant proportion of that land, assuming the Key Rail Notice of Requirement is confirmed and they acquire the land, will be held by Key Rail and one other landowner. There's probably a third landowner that owns some significant sites, but certainly the major landowner has shown an intention to sort of hold land and lease it, which I'm not passing comment on the merits or otherwise of that, but what we are certainly getting is indications from some investors who would want to purchase a site for development that despite having, you know, recently rezoned a significant amount of land, all of a sudden we're in a situation where people wanting to purchase sites and develop them all of a sudden it's pretty short on supply again. So it's a concentration, as in it's effectively held in two major landowners and a third that owns a couple of three major sites as well.
So effectively land banking, I think, is the term we call it, isn't it?
I think that major landowner has certainly strong aspirations to develop land. I don't think they're sitting on land with the intent of sort of obtaining land value increases. I think it's certainly an intergenerational commitment to the region by that landowner. But it just means that other players coming in that are looking to secure sites are starting to struggle, despite the fact that, as I said, we rezoned some land sort of 4 or 5 years ago.
Right. Okay. Thank you. Moving just down the same page onto paragraph 17, and your second sentence there, where you say that NEIZ extension area provisions propose a different method. Is it that they propose or they require a different method? Just wasn't quite sure there. It is a matter that's been raised in submission, so I just really want to clarify.
Require would be a more appropriate word than propose. I agree with that, yes. I guess you can always apply for a consent to do something that isn't in a plan, but certainly at the moment the expectation of the plan is it would be quite a different stormwater outcome to the original Northeast Industrial Zone. So, yeah.
Thank you. So the other thing I really just wanted to talk and explore with you about is that many of the submitters that we've heard from both over the last couple of weeks and in this, the submissions for those who had chosen not to speak, is concerns about predetermination of this, and particularly the council's role to date. Obviously, you've talked through the council has dual hats, or several hats, which is quite normal. But what would your response be to the point that's been made to us of predetermination, and that the MCA process was lip service?
I guess few points on that. I guess the first one is that broader strategic planning function that I've talked about.
I don't want to stay here. I can't bring my daughter up here. She never mentioned her father, but I didn't ask him to.
Please go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. That broader strategic planning function that I've talked about, I think that's more than a technocrat or a technical function. So that's a function that you know, officers support elected members and their community with planning long term for outcomes. And I think that's been addressed in my memorandum and what I spoke to this morning. You know, as a planner, I've been involved heavily in specific RMA activities, and I think the way the council has carried itself through this process is there's been some very deliberate things we've done to make sure that we respect that independent RMA effects-based process. We have a panel of independent commissioners. We have a panel of expert witnesses who are largely nationally based experts who work in this field. And I fully, as a representative of the council, understand and appreciate the important, critically important role that plays in terms of testing, I guess, for want of a better term, that broader community planning or strategic planning that's been undertaken. So those, as you all know, as well as your other panel members and myself, those experts are operating as expert witnesses. And, you know, we've clearly differentiated myself from that process and what I've talked to you about this morning. So in terms of, you know, it's a fine balance in between calling it predetermination versus actually doing what I think the government is increasingly asking local councils to do, which is to think about the long-term outcomes of their community and work towards them. You know, we are operating under the Resource Management Act at the moment, and I respect that, but I think that process, I guess, one of its key criticisms has been that it hasn't thought about long-term outcomes, it's thought about effects. You know, clearly we have to make it a recommendation and a decision under the RMA, but I guess there is also the LGA and the, you know, Land Transport Management Act that are functions of council. And I would say, rather than predetermination, it's council fulfilling its functions outside of the RMA to provide a clear indication to the community, to the government, to private investors about what the plan for Palmerston North is. And this part of the process that we're in today is about testing and making sure that everything that's happened before now I guess, assist as you head down through the funnel. And as I said earlier, look at those site-specific effects of this process. So, sorry, a slightly long-winded answer, but I think an interesting question.
No, thank you. It is helpful, and it's a bit of a chicken and an egg situation to some extent, isn't it? And I mean, that's, again, a lot of what's been put in front of us is other submitters also asking that our recommendation is not to confirm the notice because it's in advance of the penalty occurring as well. Do you have any advice to us on that, as equally so, as in terms of the timing aspect?
I think there has been a lot of work occurring across a number of agencies to try and provide some certainty to the long-term growth of Palmerston North. And, you know, I think in terms of that transport component, you know, one of the areas I covered in the original memorandum dated 15 June was, you know, there was a 2010 joint transport study done by the Regional Council, NZTA, as they were called at the time, the city and the district. And if you look at the outcome of that 2010 piece of work, And then you look at the outcome of the recent sort of strategic business case undertaken by Waka Kotahi, and what they called the Network Options Report. There's an incredibly strong alignment between the transport planning objectives that came out of both of those processes. Both of those processes concluded a regional freight ring road or a state highway network which circled the city, included Kohanga Bunnythorpe Road and Ashurst Bunnythorpe Road. I'm not sure that a one-off RMA process, if we planned for our communities based entirely on one-off RMA processes, I'm not sure we would actually be broadly achieving the purpose of the Local Government Act or other, as I said, the Land Transport Management Act and those sorts of things. And there's been a lot written about this, but I certainly think what the city's trying to do is bring together all those pieces of work into a logical plan. And for some, as I said, they may describe that as predetermination, but if you look more broadly, I think it's actually what's being asked of local communities and councils.
So, one again, going back to what the submitters have raised with us, another issue is many of them have said it's come at them by surprise, and they only found out about this. Has the potential development of the site been signalled for longer, or what would be your feedback on that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the things with RMA processes is they really focus people's thoughts, because you get sent a public notice or in a letter that there's a specific development proposal occurring on a specific piece of land. It's described in detail. There's lots of information and there's plans, and it tends to focus people's thoughts. We're all busy living our lives and getting on with things, but when you tend to receive one of those letters, it triggers a particular reaction. However, if you were following that broader strategic planning process that I've talked about, that has really been happening since more than a decade. My 15 June 21 memo included the 2007 Joint Industrial Land Review and a summary of that in appendix. Appendix one of that shows a very basic schematic from 2007 showing the airport, the rail, and an extended northeast industrial area expanding out to Bunnythorpe. So that was a planning exercise that involved engagement with key stakeholders and landowners and reporting through council. It led to the boundary change. Those other documents that I've referenced and, the spatial planning exercises, the boundary change, all of those were public planning exercises. They weren't things that were done in a vacuum. So, for instance, the spatial plans were part of an LTP. Both of those, 2018 and 2021, every landowner receives a short note that we're doing an LTP process and where they can obtain further information. So I accept that broader strategic planning exercise tends to occur at a higher level and maybe doesn't trigger specific interest from specific landowners, but it is a public process and it's one that's been happening for over a decade. But as I said, the tension tends to be, when you get a public notice under the RMA, it triggers a particular response.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. That's been really helpful.
Commissioner Mackinson.
Good morning, Mr. Murphy. Thank you for being available today. I did have some questions around the sort of predetermination issue and how sort of the Basin Bridge discussion that we had with Ms. Tancock around reliance on infrastructure that's not there yet. But I think Commissioner Sweetman's already covered those with you, so I have no questions now.
And Commissioner Pomare.
Morning, Mr. Murphy. Thank you very much for making yourself available this morning to present your additional memorandum, which has been really, really helpful, as other commissioners have already alluded to, and clarifying questions that have arisen during the course of the hearing. I've also had the majority of my questions asked and addressed. There are just two remaining questions that I have for you. And the first one relates to stormwater. You suggested in your memorandum that, in your view, there is merit in undertaking a review of the current stormwater model versus a more singular integrated, I think, model. I think that was the way you referred to it. To clarify how best to achieve required outcomes for stormwater and stormwater management and flood control, I'm just wondering, in your view, whether such a review might effectively result in the NEIZ rules being applied to the whole of the freight hub site, which, as I understand it, would then require the detention of 10% of the total volume of stormwater across the full extent of the designation site.
That's a really interesting question. I think the Kewarol site is of such a size and scale that I anticipate that they will address stormwater. That's my understanding of their proposal, that they will address all the stormwater effects of their development. In time, assuming the notice of requirement is confirmed, any conditions that sit with that notice of requirement will really dictate or direct the way in which that site is developed in the future. If it is confirmed, we will have to make a decision at some point about the underlying zoning of that notice of requirement site. It obviously would be rezoned industrial or northeast industrial zone. But I think, given that it will be designated, and the effect of that designation is that it overrides the district plan, and the designation will be confirmed before there is any rezoning. I actually think the way in which stormwater is managed from the Kewarol site is really going to be influenced by this process more than any subsequent district plan change process. So I guess the conditions of any consent are going to be important in that respect. I get my comments in the memorandum regarding the stormwater work that we're doing, it relates more to the northeast industrial zone land that is not of interest to Kewarol. I know there have been some submissions from some of those landowners who have expressed sort of some concern maybe about the way in which Kewarol is proposing to address stormwater, and they've also expressed concern about the nature of the rules in the extension area. So I think that stormwater piece of work will be more about the undeveloped northeast industrial zone land that isn't of interest to Kewarol than the Kewarol land, if that makes sense.
Thanks for that response. But given what you said about the importance of this process in determining the way in which stormwater is managed in the future, and the importance of, obviously, the conditions that are imposed on the NOR around that, does that not mean that this process needs to ensure to the greatest extent possible that stormwater effects can be managed within the designation site?
Yes.
Okay. And given that, as I understand it, the current proposals for managing stormwater and flooding effects are based on the NEIZ rules applying only to that part of the designation site, not the whole site. So we understand that those effects can be dealt with within the site. But should that prove not to be the case, and I understand what you're saying about the overall designation taking precedence, but is there not still a risk that the stormwater downstream, the downstream stormwater and flooding effects, you know, may be significant to the degree that, you know, there isn't sufficient land available and suitable land available within the designation site to deal with those effects?
Yeah. I think the obligation, in my mind, the obligation is on Kiwirral to demonstrate that they can develop their NOR site without any downstream effects. I think if there is a, and then how Kiwirral or any conditions manage stormwater within that site, whether it's a more low impact versus a traditional sort of engineering detention area, I think will be a matter for the panel to work through and the technical evidence that I admit I haven't been over. But I think obviously there's an obligation on Kiwirral to manage any downstream effects. If there is a broader piece of work that is done, which I've flagged will occur as part of the master planning exercise, regardless of the outcome of the NOR and any conditions that are applied regarding stormwater, I think Kiwirral may well have the opportunity to participate in, and well, they'll be part of that master planning exercise. And then, you know, there may be opportunities to reflect on the outcome of whatever this NOR process results in terms of any stormwater conditions once a broader piece of work is done. But I think at this point in time, the key issue is, you know, can Kiwirral demonstrate that they're undertaking their activity without any downstream effects, and there might be an opportunity, as I said, for a broader reflection at a later time.
Thank you. That's most helpful. So my final question then relates to your paragraph 26, where you deal with the cultural effects. And you referred there to the lack of information on cultural effects, in the wider CNZDH area. And you specifically note that Kiwirail will be required to do further work in this area should the NOR be confirmed. Now, I'm just wanting to get clarification from you that you're not suggesting that this master planning process is in any way a substitute for the deficient information on cultural effects in terms of this process for consideration of the NOR, are you?
No, I'm not. I think Kiwirral, regardless of any work that the city collaborates with broader strategic partners, I think regardless of that work, I think from what I have observed through the process and my involvement, there is some additional work for Kiwirral to do in that space, and I think they've acknowledged that. But I think what I'm alluding to here, I guess, is it may well be that this broader piece of work can piggyback or connect in with that piece of work that Kiwirral will do. But regardless of anything Kiwirral is doing, the work that the city will be coordinating for the distribution master plan with those partners that I've talked about, for which iwi will be are on the reference group and the steering group, there will be a broader piece of work done. So, you know, a large chunk of this area came into the city, as you know, and I've explained, in 2012. So it's a part of the city where we have less historical information in terms of its cultural values. It tends to be in that boundary between where Rangatane and Kowhata take an interest. Just on that, we have Rangatane on the reference group and steering group, and we're in the process of discussing bringing Kowhata into both the reference group and steering group as well for this piece of work. So those discussions are happening now. But yeah, there will be, as I said, regardless of what Kiwirral do, this is a broader piece of work.
Thanks very much for your clarification and your responses generally. No further questions. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Murphy. That was extremely enlightening, and appreciate your time.